Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 125th episode of the Matter Podcast. I'm your co-host, Roger Bode, joined as always with my best friend and other co-host, Michael Hamilton. Michael, I think for the first time in podcast history, you are not the youngest member of the podcast. You are now an old 30-year-old, old person like me that I've been on every other episode of this podcast. How does it feel?
Is that true? Have all of our guests been older than me?
I guess I don't know how old Michael Fung is, but I think he's older than you.
Yeah, I think he's slightly older than me. And we haven't had Brody on?
No, we've never had Brody on. I was thinking about that before when Lucas was coming on. I was like, we've never had Brody on. Oh, well.
We'll get him sometime.
Yeah, it's only so.
You guys don't have very many guests for the most part, right? Like, so there's not a whole lot of sample size to go off of there.
Yeah, and Brody's always world traveling. It's hard to, like, fix him to a standard location. No. While he's jet setting constantly. Lucas is more homeward bound more often. Yeah, he's got more school responsibilities like me.
More real life. Every time I text Brody, it's kind of a pain because I like don't think about it when I send him the text, but he's always in a different time zone. So he never responds when I think he's going to. It's always 3 a.m. I look up and there's a text from Mr. Goes to Bed at 11 p.m. every night and he's still up and about.
That's fair.
Even when he's in the U.S., sometimes he is asleep at really weird times anyway.
Yeah, jet lag's real. Mm-hmm.
But so, thank you for coming on, Lucas.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. It's nice to finally get on. I know we've talked about it quite a few times in the past, but it's good to actually do it now.
For sure. Anything you want to get out of the way before we get things started?
Yeah, sure. This is the shameless plug section. So, you can check me out on Twitter or Blue Sky at Achilles2032. I should have a link to my Medify account pinned on the top of that if you're interested in any individual coaching or general courses on how to get better at the game or how to be good at Starvo. That should be coming in the next week or so, hopefully. But other than that, yeah, just check out the Runaways podcast, the absolute number one premier flesh and blood podcast that is available on all platforms, second to none. And yeah, also check out our Discord, our free version, and our Discord subscriptions are pretty cool if you're trying to get to know other competitively minded players.
For sure. And if you want to learn how to win tournaments, particular callings with Starvo, be sure to check out Michael's content on Patreon this week. So
yes,
that's going to be coming out soon. Mm-hmm. Okay. So why Achilles, by the way? This is a random personal thing. Like, you know, he had quite the weakness.
I hear. So like 13, 14 year old Lucas was like, I need a name that's not like Lucas Oswald. And I was like thinking about it. And then I was like, oh, that would be a cool name. So that was my name.
Do you know the mythology behind Achilles? Do you know why?
Yeah, okay. No. I was a super big nerd when I mean, I still am, obviously. but I was a super big like Greek mythology nerd back in the day. So I know all of that.
Same. Yeah,
apparently my Achilles heel is your co-host on the podcast.
He's a lot of people's.
Record is to show anything.
Do you know why Achilles was only weak in his heels?
Yes.
Michael?
I do think it's cool that we both have a Greek origin for gamer tags or usernames or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's because his mother was dipping him in like this, like, I think it wasn't the river. Fountain of youth.
It was the River Styx.
The River Styx that would make him basically immortal, can't have any weaknesses, but she held him by the heels and she couldn't touch it herself. So only his heels were not fully dipped in the River Styx. So that's eventually what did him in, was the cut to the heel that he was held by his mother.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
It's very sad.
But this is not a Greek mythology podcast.
Unfortunately.
This is Flesh and Blood. And in particular, this week is going to be Living Legend and Starvo focused podcast, because last week I was alluding to this when I was saying like the format's condensing, because I think you and I were both on the same page. And I think a lot of people in the know were like, yeah, Starvo is the best deck again. And I think that was born to be the case over the past weekend, right?
Yeah, I think there's still arguments that could be made, but the top four of the calling was 3 Starvos, including a Starvo Mirror in the finals. And the Battle Hardened, only 1 Starvo made the top 8, but it did end up winning the event as well. So Starvo looking pretty good right now.
Yeah, the other Starvos are too busy like being in the top 8 or day 2, you know?
Yeah.
So you've been a big Starvo fan for a while, Lucas. What, like, Were you playing when he was originally around?
So yeah, I was playing when he was originally around. I was a big Chain guy back at that time. I really liked Chain early on. I would watch the old like Fab Gauntlet, I think were the names, with Brennan Patrick and Dante Delfico casting Blitz games way back in the day. But I really liked that hero. And then I played Viscerai for one event as well, although that was the only event that I top baited during like that entire time. But I played Starvo, like I tested with him at that time and he was a lot of fun. I played him at like some skirmishes maybe, but I didn't really like start playing him until the LL calling that I won in Barcelona. And ever since then, he's just been like my favorite hero. It's not close. I love the hero so much. He's so much fun.
You like doing the thing, you like revealing the three elements and just getting free value turn after turn.
It's like, it's not even just like sometimes your hand is like Oak and Old and then three cards. It's like, okay, well, whatever. It's pretty good. But I also just enjoy the Guardian play style a lot, where you get to play like this slow, more value centric game. You kind of get to balance like normal fab math value with like trying to set up your big Starvo turns and trying to like not take any damage when you don't have to. That's one of my favorite things about the hero, is it feels like he reduces your opponent's life total without them really having much of a say in it, but he's also pretty good at keeping his own life total pretty high, which I think leads to a lot of turn cycle wins for the hero. But also I just love eyes. I love when I ask my opponent a question and they get it wrong. So
yes, that's fair. Speaking of ice, I forgot how good of a card Slagmite was.
The card is quite bonkers, a while, right? It's ridiculous.
I think most of my games the Frostbite has been worth an extra card, and yep. So it's like you save three life and you get two extra cards from your opponent over the course of the game. That's a lot of value.
They also just have to play around it all game. Like the whole game, they are usually taking slightly suboptimal lines to play around it. Like it's so good that like it's mere existence. Like I like didn't even consider it in our game in top four, and it like I just completely misplayed around the card. Like my two main misplays were both based on that card. Oh, I love it. It's broken, but it's cool design, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when it was first spoiled in Everfest, people were like, why would you ever play this over Rampart? You only get like a couple of value, but you could theoretically get like infinity value over Rampart if you keep using it turn after turn. And like, it just took a while for people to realize like the implicit value of the Frostbite being worth so much on like critical turn cycles. Like I think in the calling Michael won against Prism, didn't like you use a Frostbite to like stuff like five or six
something tunic counter or something. Yeah. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, it was a lot of aura attacks, and if Fino had his tunic on three, he could have used his tunic to get around that, but he didn't have his tunic on three, fortunately. So Frostbite saved a lot of life.
Yeah, pretty good. I think every Starvo player is on the same page where like lightning is just the worst element in the deck, though, right? Is there any argument?
Whoa,
there?
There is a big argument. I played eight of the same lightning card. My whole deck was built around the same stupid lightning card, and Michael just played three. He thought it was a joke.
He is not a fan of that card.
Fool's errand. That card is crazy. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think our opinions on the best way to build a Starvo deck were very different. I was like looking at your blue ice base, and I would say ice was by far the worst element in your deck. Some of those ice cards looked really, really bad.
Yeah. No, it's kind of an interesting thing because, first of all, I didn't really prepare for Chicago, and I did not build the deck that I played. I just like copied one of my teammates' decks. Mm-hmm. So like I'm in this weird point of like I want to defend the list and like defend my teammates, but I'm also like not sure if it's actually the right thing to do. But it felt pretty good. Like the fact that I had eight cards in my deck that pretty much always did the thing that they were supposed to do, and that thing is really good. What was pretty good. Like basically every time I drew a Somersault, I did have two attacks to target with it. And even if they're two blocks, it's like it's still just like, you know, a one card four, a one card five. And I think especially with how many mirrors there were going to be, just being able to convert that card to like sink below when you need it to is, I think, pretty important. Being able to be like flexible. Like I threw, this was three games this tournament where I threw the same Crippling Crush three times. As well as obviously a myriad of other times where I Oak and Olded somebody twice or Starstruck them twice or... There was, I had a testing game where I resolved five Starstrucks consecutively the night before. That was pretty cool. and also just being like one of the best defensive tools. I do understand the merit of playing all the three blocks and just being a normal, regular, degular, good value deck, but I enjoyed having just a million squillion shitty two blocks and bouncing them every single turn with my stupid somersaults, because apparently you're allowed to do that now.
I forget what round it was during my rally back, but I think I cast Oakenold four times in the same game between somersaults and then also using Pulse of Candlehold to buy it back. So
yeah, it was not a card that I played, but maybe that
you can't somersault Pulse of Candlehold. So
nah,
no, but you can get Oakenold back with it. So
sure.
Did you play only one Pulse? I see in
I
your
played
list
one Pulse. I only played Eisenloft.
Okay. Yeah. What made you make that decision?
Because it was in the list that I copied. Is that's like the answer to the question, like the direct.
Would you run that back? Would you put the pulses back in?
I'm not sure. Yellow Pulse is really bad. I really don't like that card. I was happy that I didn't play that. Red Pulse. It started as like we were taking it out against a lot of the aggro decks because it's like kind of awkward. It's a red no block. You can't somersault it. And like a lot of times it just kind of is clunky because we're not trying to activate Crown of Seeds every turn, right? That's like, I only want to do that, in a lot of the faster matchups, like with my Tunic counter pretty much exclusively almost, unless, you know, like I end their turn and they stumble, and that card's just not very flexible. And one of the things that I like so much about the deck right now is that it does feel very flexible. But I think maybe I would put it back in retrospect. But I'm unsure. I didn't miss it or anything, but it is a powerful card. It can do some good things, but I liked it.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Michael, what's your pulse on the pulses? I want to get your pulse on the pulses.
The red pulse, I think, is... There's some spots where it sucks it's a red no block, but I think most of the time it's worth it for the higher confuse consistency. The fact that Ice Lightning... if you have an Earth card to go with the Ice Lightning, then you know you have a big dominant attack because almost all the Earth cards are big attacks. I had two Rootbound Carapace. That's a card that I'm not sure I would play going forward. But any other time you have it, it's like Pulse and Rootbound Carapace are the only misses for Earth attacks. So I think covering Ice and Lightning are the two most important elements for a non-attack to cover, which is why I think it's pretty good, because then your blues can be Lightning or Ice and you'll still have the fuse. Yellow pulse, I think, just sucks. I was playing with it, and every time I drew it, I'd be like, man, I got an ice card, I got a lightning card, I got an earth card, but my hand's better to block through because the stupid yellow is an attack or whatever. It didn't actually matter that I was hitting the elements because I didn't have an attack to go with them.
Yeah, it's good with Spinal Crush.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good with Spinal Crush. And I wasn't even playing Spinal Crush in some of my test games. Just like didn't have it in the list for a little while. And I think that ultimately I did end up on three Spinal Crushes, and that it is good if you have an Ice card and a Spinal Crush in that card, but that's just like not good often enough to be worth the slot. And I replaced it with a yellow Autumn's Touch and was much happier with Autumn's Touch just hitting people. It attacked for 8 a couple times, blocked 3, just like the Pulse. And yeah.
So you always drew the Pulse without an Arsenal?
So,
no. Because thinking that through, what I'm going to go through, I think Michael's picking up on, but just in case it's unclear, is if you have an Arsenal and you have Pulse, you can just put whatever your best Earth attack is, or sometimes even Oakenold if you fuse, and then you can activate Crown of Seeds to put whatever attack you want back up. And if Pulse was your first Earth card in Banish and you still have more Earth cards, or three more Earth cards left in your graveyard, it just turns on Felling with just that one card by itself as well. So I had that line come up a lot where Pulse was my first Earth card in Banish, and then I was able to attack with Felling of the Crown with three Earth cards, and then Felling of the Crown was turned on without any decomposes prior.
Yeah, I think the line where you have Tunic up and you can put back an Oakenold on top of your deck, when that lines up, then obviously the card's great. When you Starvo Fuse, you still have to have another Earth card though, because you're playing this Pulse, and then it's basically just counting.
Yeah, your hand has to be the Pulse, a blue, Ice, and Earth in addition. Like, that has to be...
And you have to have Tunic up.
Yeah, and you have to have Tunic up and an Arsenal.
Sure.
Yeah, which is asking for so many things, but in those spots, yeah, yeah, really so, good.
So, yeah, that's for the Oakenold line. I'm just saying for just like just getting back a felling of the crown, well, though.
So it's, I mean, oh, for getting felling, I guess. Because the other thing is like that's any hand where it would be like Yellow Autumn's Touch. If you just have another lightning card, then it's pretty similar anyway. You just don't have the resource awkwardness.
Yeah, the line that I was doing the most was just like I have a Tunic up in an arsenal, and then I block with two cards or whatever, and then I reveal blue ice pulse, put a felling back on top, draw the felling, attack with felling.
And then you have to have Tunic again for that, right?
Why? You if can. I have a blue ice, the blue ice.
You still have to activate Tunic.
Well, you pitch the blue ice, you activate crown, you have two floating, and your hand is now just the felling.
Yeah. You have Tunic, yeah.
So I know this, we actually talked about this, but you, Roger, you said that you kind of needed uses for your Tunic in your games,
mm-hmm.
but that didn't line up with my experience. I felt like, I guess I wasn't even playing Tunic in every matchup. I had an Earth chest, a 2-block that makes the Embodiment Verse, Bark Skin of whatever. And I was also playing Balance of Justice in a lot of aggro matchups where if they're playing Art of War, I'm just happy to have my 5-value hat that sure. also gives me more fuse consistency. So especially with that in mind, I just found that Lightning or Yellow Pulse was pretty awkward.
I guess that makes sense.
I do think what you said about it being your first Earth card and banished to make felling a lot easier to turn on, that does matter quite a bit. And it is really strong. I ultimately just went the other route where I just had 8 decomposed cards on top of the bag in my deck to make sure I could turn on my fellings more consistently.
Yeah, I was much lower on my decomposed counts. I had the 2 Rootbound Carapace, but those cards sucked. And then I only had 1 red tilling and then 3 blue tilling. And I think Ooh. That was basically it, aside from felling is it for decomposing my list.
I was a big fan of red tilling. Even just playing Wounded, the card that Michael played at Nats.
Wounded Bull.
That one's pretty good when your whole deck is just poopy 2-blocks and you're trying to swing hammer. It's nice.
Yeah, I definitely wish I was on 3 red tilling. Looking back, that card being able to that card being like a 10 power when you do the Starvo thing, that's a lot of damage.
Pretty much. Yeah, and it doesn't ask you that much. You just need 2 Earth cards and an action in your discard, which is not that hard to get.
No.
But also, like the downside is it's 1 point worse when you throw it than like whatever like Autumn's Touch would be or whatever. But you just get so much plus from having it.
Yeah,
it also blocks... you were also playing Autumn's Touch red, but.
It blocks 2 compared to Autumn's Touch blocking 3, but I think you're attacking with it more than you're blocking with it, and that makes up for that 1 damage difference.
Agreed.
So let's say I was going into a tournament and my only goal was to beat Starvo. Is there a deck that just like consistently beats him up anywhere in the metagame, or is he just...
So I think the answer is Florian, but I would probably not take advice from apparently anybody who played Florian at this tournament. Because they all were just losing to Starvos.
I lost to a Florian for my second loss day one because I didn't know how to play the matchup. And then I learned how to play the matchup and then I beat my second Florian opponent pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I don't know. It's possible that maybe at the time my lists were not good enough. I didn't have the decomposed cards in at the time. And I didn't have all the somersaults. I think I had 6. But I was just getting like thrashed by my locals. I was by my one local. I was playing like Exposed to the Elements. I was playing Frozen to Death. I was playing Poison the Wells. And it's just like none of it ever mattered. But he was also like playing around those cards and arsenaling cards that like make sense to arsenal in when that's the counterplay that your opponent has. And it did not appear that any of the Florians were doing that. Every time I watched a Florian game, they had like no chest, they were getting blown out by Poison the Well, and they were just dead with like 20 rune chance in play, which I do not think is how it's normally supposed to go. So I would say Florian, but apparently not. Also, apparently Dromai players thought they were good in the Starvo, and that didn't work out for them either. So I don't really know. Maybe if you want to beat Starvo, just play Starvo.
Yeah.
I think the problem with bringing a deck that theoretically lines up well against Starvo is there you don't have any comeback mechanics. If Starvo just kind of runs hot on fuse, you don't have any way to like really slow him down. You can try to play these D-reacts, you can do whatever you're doing that's like lines up well against him, but when he's just attacking for 9 into 3 or 9 into 4 with a Frostbite on a 3-card hand repeatedly, no matter what your deck is, it's going to be really hard to beat that.
Yeah, I think CYB is the way that you're like supposed to try and come back from that spot, which is why I think the Florian deck and like I don't think the Oldham deck actually has a good matchup necessarily into Starvo, but I do think that's the kind of deck that can come back from being behind early. But I think that, like, without CYB, like you said, it's just like you're either getting your armor run through or your life total's going down or your game plan's not being properly pushed forward. And it's just kind of a nightmare no matter how you do it.
Yeah. That's fair. I think if we jump back in the time machine to 2 years ago, whenever the indie calling was, I remember that, like, stacked Viscerai was also pretty good against Starvo, especially my slower version of Starvo. But the problem is, even if the matchup's like fine for them, if you're just fusing more often than not, you're gonna be fine.
Also, it was fine for stacked Viscerai.
It was.
You should have told me that when I was getting beat up by Starvos when I was playing Viscerai.
I don't think it is now. Yeah, especially with the somersaults.
I was saying back in the day. That's why I had to put stupid enchanting melody in my deck. That's how bad the matchup was.
You actually never had to.
It was right.
You never had to, even a little bit.
I was forced. There was no other way.
Exactly.
But the other interesting thing that was brought up was like a bunch of D reacts in order to cover up the big attacks. And those used to be especially punishing for when he wasn't doing the thing and he was just like throwing a 3 for 7 or whatever. And it really let your opponents get like the value off their D reacts and then also maybe like make some rune chance or do something proactive on their turn as well. But with the new gauntlets, what's the interesting thing is if you have, if you know you're playing against a deck like Florian and you know they have like a defense reaction arsenal, they've been sitting on it, their arsenal for a while, or they just based on like how they've been playing the game, they're like D-react heavy, you can just activate gloves now and pass, and they don't have a good way to like filter their hands, and then they're just sitting with a bunch of D-reacts, not doing anything anymore.
The Florian deck has Crown of Seeds.
That's fair, yeah.
But yeah, in general, I mean, even then, that's not like letting them filter everything out.
Yeah.
And the Starvo deck has always been kind of capable of doing that because it has Crown of Seeds as well to kind of like slow down and filter.
Yeah, but I was just saying like the new gloves let you have like that even extra filtering.
You like Crown on your opponent's turn and then you still look at 3 Frost Fangs and 2 Icy Encounters and maybe.
Yeah.
Supposed to run attack, okay? But like something like that, you know, pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing that we saw is Easton Douglas, my opponent who made the finals, was playing 3 copies of Smack to Reality and 2 Pummels. So if those line up the right way, and he also had the Goliath Gauntlet, of course, to pair with the Smacks. If those line up the right way, sometimes you just like get juiced as Florian anyway.
My experience with the Florian matchup was like, this is like crazy, but this was how it was. I don't know, maybe I'm just bad, or maybe my friend's just a genius, but like I had games where I would like poison the well a CYB and I would kill his chest with like exposed and frozen death. And then I would like smack him for like 25 rune chance and I would still just lose. But that can just do some crazy stuff if you give it room in the late game. Sure. Like Mordrotide plus Germinate is like one of their best ways to come back. Obviously Thistle Bloom plus a big CYB is pretty goofy. So they do have ways to do it. It's hard, obviously, because none of the Florians top aided. But
I think on top of not like Florian is probably the matchup you're wanting to see a Starvo. If you play against like an aggressive Viscerai, or we talked about Dromai a little bit, or Prism as well, I think all those matchups would be quite challenging for Florian.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they're like Prism is just obviously like come on.
So I also didn't put like much at all prep for this tournament going into it. I was wrapping up finals at school. Up until the Thursday before. So I had never played against a Florian, so that's why I didn't know what to do in that matchup and lost round 3. But I also had never actually played into Prism on Starvo, like, recently. And people kept telling me, like, oh, this matchup feels kind of rough. What are you supposed to do? And I kept saying, I haven't put any time or resources into it. But is there, like, you just got to do the thing?
I think there is some play, but I think it's a lot of, like, experience. Because there's usually at some point you're not supposed to target auras, but like figuring out when that is hard. And then I think there's also some middle game stuff that's interesting, where you can kind of figure out like based on which auras they have, you can kind of craft your game plan in different ways. Like if they have like a passing mirage and like a parable of humility out, you can just like try to ignore them all game if it's OG Prism, because like their heralds don't have super important on hits, and you can just kind of ignore them depending on how the texture of the game is going. But sometimes, like, you just have to kill those kinds of auras as soon as they hit the board. And I think usually where it's, like, close is around the, like, 20 life-ish area.
Where, that would, like, make sense. Because that's where I felt like the game was slipping away from me in my game of the weekend. I played against Will, and yeah. I feel like I was crushing it, like, in an early game. I guess quite literally, it's on a couple of turn cycles. And, like, I got – I was still at, like, 30, and he was around 15. And then I still was prioritizing, like, trying to keep his board as clean as possible. And then he just started creeping in more and more and just had more double aura turns that I can really keep up with. And then I stopped doing the thing, so then my turn started being not as high value as it used to be. And then the game kind of slipped away from me from there.
I also think all of the ice cards that you have access to are really powerful. Those being CLF, Stalagmite, and Winter's Wail. I think all those three cards are really powerful in the matchup. But it's kind of interesting to use them. Because, like, it's weird because Winter's Wail usually wants to target an aura. But, like, 4-on-hit Frostbite is, like, such a pain in the ass for that deck to deal with. It does not deal with that well. Their turns are all, like, pitch a yellow into War Tune, one floating for footsteps, or it's, like, pitch two yellows, swing your board, and it feels like, or it's just block all your cards, play an aura, whatever your turn is. But it feels like a lot of the time that deck can struggle to deal with the Frostbite, and I think, like, picking the points where you target them with your Winter's Wail is a pretty big deal in the matchup. And then also, like, obviously knowing when to stalagmite them. Because most players at this point, I think, know how to play around it when it's just, like, face up.
Sure.
Right? Like, you know, don't pitch a yellow to swing 10 auras if you have no other resources. Mm-hmm. Probably not the best thing to be doing. And then CLF is just, like, one of the best cards in the deck to, like, buy you a turn when you don't fuse. Right?
Sure.
So, like, setting that card at the right time, I think, is one of the important things that you can do that's not just show them the crayons.
Yeah. I played against the Prism at the calling, and I was also surprised how effective CLF was before they had a board, because, like you said, the Frostbite's really good against them. Just
they can't do anything.
My opponent wanted to block with multiple cards and play a blue aura, and, like, that just costs your whole hand now if you want to pitch a card to play the blue aura.
Yeah, I played two CLFs in my match, but I guess Will was just able to power through with blues during those turn cycles. So, like,
yeah, it's also, like, when you play the CLF, you kind of have to follow it up with something big. Like, when you play it, like, I really want to be setting, like, a Crippling Crush and then, like, hopefully drawing either two ice cards or a fuse.
Sure.
Because, like, if you just CLF them and then you, like, kill an aura and then next turn you, like, kill another aura and it dies, you look a little silly. You didn't really do anything.
I looked a little silly. That's for sure.
That's okay.
You live in the
process.
Yeah. I'm still thrilled with where I ended up, given how bad I started.
How did you finish?
19th.
Nice.
Yeah. So I started 1-2 into X and 3 in the last round.
Yeah. Well, you, like, walk up to me. You, like, Michael and I were talking after one of the early rounds, and you, like, walk up to us, and I was like, how are you doing? You're like, 2-2. I think I'm going to drop. No, the deck doesn't feel very good. I just got my ass kicked by this Florian deck. You know, this is all really, this is awful. But I'm glad you powered through and found your stride.
Yeah. Starbro was more cooperative with me for the rest of my rounds.
So it does help when the Bazinga guy bazingas for you.
Yeah. That's the... Oh, go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I was going to change the subject a little bit. I want to talk about Starbro mirrors.
Ooh, sure. That's my favorite.
Yeah. So I think that Starbro looks like this really high variance hero, and sometimes I would say against, like, some of your rougher matchups, you do kind of need to, like, do the crayons, and especially on, like, very key turns, it can matter quite a bit. But I heard a number from you, Lucas. I heard that you were 15-0 in Starbro mirrors.
In rated Starbro mirrors, if you include, like, skirmishes, the number's a lot higher.
Okay. So would you say that the Starbro mirror feels pretty low variance then?
So what I've been telling most people that ask me this kind of question is that, first of all, 15-0 is not a number you get by playing better, and only by playing better. Like, your opponents are going to have to make some mistakes and you're going to get lucky. But I do think that it puts me in a spot to be able to speak on it pretty well. It rarely feels high variance in my experience. Like, I almost never play a Starvo mirror, and then at the end of it, I'm like, well, they just fused more than me. Nothing you can do. Or, like, they played Awakening. Shit, get them next time. And like when I win, there have been a few examples of that I can think of, but like for the most part, it almost never feels like, yeah, man, I just kicked that guy's ass. Like every turn I just fused and then I threw Oaken and then I threw Crippling and then I somersaulted and I threw it 8 times in a row and they just like died and had no counterplay. It usually is like, yeah, I think they probably messed this up and they messed this spot up and they did this wrong. And I think there's actually a lot of depth to it outside of the variance. And it's such a weird hero because like none of it shows up in gameplay. Like you don't see it because most of it is like, what card do I block with versus what do I arsenal? And do I crown here? And like when you're watching, if somebody just activates crown and then plays their turn, you don't like think about necessarily, oh, what if they didn't crown? Because you're thinking about like their 5-card hand after that and their most immediate decisions. But I do think that Starbo has a lot of really subtle, like very difficult decisions that people just make wrong. I also think the hero is just one of the coolest examples of like kind of base fab principles work super well. But it's not just about damage math. One thing that Noah was talking to me about a few hours ago was that he was saying that one of the reasons he likes ice is because it feels like there's very high agency in non-damage related areas, like not just doing the best math play and like doing what the deck should do based on numbers. And I feel like that's one of the coolest things about Starbo is that so much of his skill feels like it works with Fab's game system and it's like a normal deck, but it's also not just numbers and math and percentages and stuff like that.
Is that just like channel like Frigid and Frostbites that you're talking about, or
I think Stalagmite. I think in the mirror, your armor block.
It's huge.
The way that you position your arsenal, where it's like it's not math. I think arsenaling cards in Fab is one of the most underrated skills, and I think with Starbo, it like really shines through because like they're all disposable because you can just crown whatever you arsenal, so like it doesn't matter. But like
that's not always true.
It matters so much what card you have in your arsenal.
Yeah.
In so many different game textures, I want to set so many different kinds of cards. And those skills are just like really cool to me. Because a lot of Starvo, I think, ends up being like mapping out your win condition in like a very, very clear turn-to-turn basis. Like the way I'm going to win this game is I'm going to play this card. I'm going to play this channel lake. And then next turn, I'm going to do a medium thing. I'm going to eat their husk. And then next turn, and then I have two turns where one of those turns, I need to Starbo. I need to just kill him. I need to take no damage on the other turn. And that's how I win. Like that's it. That's very clear game plan. Don't hold cards of Winter's Wheel. Just block. You need to Starbo in the next turn or the turn after that. And that's like my win con in this specific game. And I feel like those aren't just like doing numbers or things like that. It's like a lot of set the right card, block with the equipment in the right way. Make sure that your life versus their life is positioned to where you can maximize your Starbo activations and things like that.
Yeah. It comes up a lot in the mirror where Swinging Winter's Whale is going to be worth more than arsenaling. Swinging Winter's Whale is worth 4. Arsenaling is worth less. But there's a lot of spots where your opponent has an arsenal, their tunic's on 3, and you have a way you can block with 3 of your cards, arsenal the last card, or Swing Winter's Whale with the last card. And depending on like the context of the game, I've made different choices based on like my opponent's tunic counter, what life totals are, a lot of different things like that.
Yeah, I've been in, there's like so many Starvo spots that I can think of in the mirror specifically that like I've done this a million times, but it's never been the same. So I have to make a new decision every time based on the context of the game. And I feel like that's like the ultimate card game experience. I feel like it's like understanding the spot and knowing what you're looking for, but still having to make a decision at the table because it is different every time.
Yeah.
So, I was watching this other podcast, I think it was last week, and they had a viewer question, and I think everybody handled it really badly, where they said it was about pitch stacking, and people said, oh yeah, pitch stacking just doesn't matter anymore. It's not a real thing, except for like Limited, I think, where it was like the most common answer on that podcast.
And Living Legend.
And it's what I was about to say is I think pitch stacking matters, is crucial in Starbo mirrors in particular. It's not just doing like making sure you do the ice earth, lightning, ice earth. Like, sure, like that's like, I think if you're like wanting to learn how to pitch stack, like playing Starbo is like probably one of the best training wheels in the game for like learning how to do that. is just because like you have that clear, you don't need to necessarily need to remember exactly what the cards are, but just like the typing and like what your clumps are and be like, okay, I'm about to hit a clump where I know I'm not going to have any earth for a while because first cycle I was just bricking on these hands. So this is going to be a little clunky for this. So I need to make sure I close out the game in like the next 1 to 2 turn cycles, because if I don't, I have no more star fuses for like 2 turns and I'm just going to die. And like keeping track of that stuff's really important. But then you were talking about, well, you can just Crown of Seeds, whatever you can put in your arsenal. Against the last round against Ben, I had a Pulverize set in arsenal. Just basically, it was the leftover card in one of my turn cycles. And then I drew the all red hand. And then basically I blocked and then had to basically like pitch 2 cards in order to like swing Winner's Whale, because he just swung like a 3/7. And I very specifically for 2 consecutive turns did not activate Crown of Seeds, because I didn't want that Pulverize clumped with that all red hand. So I made sure I pitched at least 2 blue cards to make sure I declumped my reds there. So like that's like a very important like pitch stacking, like, or just knowledge skill that I think is really important.
I think one of my favorite parts about Starvo pitch stacking, and again specifically the mirror, I love the Starvo mirror, one of my favorite parts is how much it matters and how little it matters at the same time. And I love that dichotomy, because I think that's one of the best parts about Fab's pitch stacking in general, is that like we talk about this, like in CC, it's mostly useless right now. And in a lot of games, it doesn't come up. But I think it's really cool having to balance your pitch stack with the fact that it might not matter. And I think that's really cool. But there's 2 reasons. The first being just awakening, right? Sometimes you're like halfway through the game, you have this elaborate pitch deck set up, and then you're down 10 life and you play awakening and you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But then sometimes you also just don't get there, right? Like sometimes you just don't, you don't draw the pitch stack, or the turn you draw your pitch stack is the turn where you both start trading cards and you can't really block anymore. And, you know,
sure.
Doesn't matter. But at the same time, a lot of games, it does matter. Like a lot of the games come down to somebody has 3 Starvo activations stacked back to back and somebody doesn't. And so one of those guys is going to win. And so I think it's really interesting, because there's also counter stacking, right? There's if you're playing things like Turn Timbers, in theory, you can try to line those up with your opponent's Starvo activations. But it's all also while playing the game. And I think that's one of the things that I think is really cool. It's the same thing reminds me back with like Lexi or Icelander. You can tell, obviously, I'm just a filthy ice main. But those heroes were also, they would play the game the whole game and play a normal value proposition and kind of do their normal thing. But you always had to have in the back of your mind, like, is my stack good? Do I need X type of card? You know, do I have to pitch this Ice Eternal now? Because I blocked with 2 of them. And if I block with my 3rd one, they can fatigue me. Or something like that. And I think Starvo has a very similar feel, where like a lot of the time you have to keep track of your pitch stack. And sometimes you do, like you mentioned, like you have to take different lines that you wouldn't otherwise take because of your pitch stack and because it's going to affect that. But you can also kind of weigh those decisions. And like in some game textures, like with that situation, I'm just going to pitch a red to Crown this Pulverize away. And I'm going to have 5 reds in a row in my pitch stack, but it is what it is, because we're not getting there.
Sure.
Or as soon as I do that, I decide this game's not going to stack. I'm not blocking when I think I should. Like we're 2 turns away. This game has to end now, because I'm just going to lose in 2 turns.
End of the game before I hit my horrible pitch stack. Yep. Like that clump. So that was good timing. What about you, Michael? Do you think pitch stacking matters a lot?
So, going into this weekend, I don't think I was playing I was not in my sharpest mental state. I've had some rough news in my personal life, and I also didn't practice that much because I was busy playing Alpha Clash the weekend before.
By the way.
Thank you. My practice did consist of me playing 4 or 5 Starvo mirrors. I think I played 1 against you, and then I played 2 against Ben, and I played 2 against Michael Fung. And I lost a lot of those. I was just getting beaten up. And I was just thinking about all the games, and I made a lot of mistakes in all the games I lost, and I learned so much from those games. And I don't think I had a single Starvo mirror where forgetting my pitch stack bit me.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I ever needed to like know it, but I do think there were a couple times where it came up. But I think more often than not, it does not come up. But it is cool that it does, and it matters when it does.
Yeah, compared to Indianapolis, the deck just fuses so much more often, which means games just end so much more often in first cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also playing one copy of Awakening, which was not the case before.
There's also just more aggressive options now, like Felling of the Crown and somersaulting cards on offense just like pushes the game so much more. I think Felling is like, I think the biggest offender of like when that card gets played, somebody takes damage pretty much every time.
Yeah. I think people were talking about like, what would you like restrict out of, or like if you wanted to like nerf Starbo again in Living Legend, like would you re-restrict Starstruck?
And
Michael didn't even have Starstruck in his winning list. Yeah. So I don't think it's Starstruck anymore. Yeah. And I think the unfortunate answer would be like potentially restricting Felling, which would really suck for everybody not Starbo that has the Earth talent. Well,
I think there's a couple things that I would do. There's like two. I guess here, I'll just say and then you go. So I would ban Awakening. I would just ban it. That card's stupid. Like regardless of how good you think it is, or like if you play it in an X matchup, like it's just kind of dumb. Like I don't really have like a super high level way to evaluate it. It's just like it's two card pulverize or crippling or Starstruck, like whatever you need. It's just you spend two cards and you get that card for free and it goes in play. It's pretty stupid, I think. Like especially with Somersault now, like the amount of turns, I want to say this happened like 4 or 5 times throughout this weekend for me, where I'm like very behind. Like against Zen, I would be down actually like 30-2, but I have a Somersault, I have a blue, I have Awakening, and I have an Earth card. So I pitch the blue, play Awakening, fuse my Earth card, block with my Earth card, whatever, get my attack. I throw my attack, whatever the matchup is, they block it a bunch. I Somersault it, I set it, and then I draw Starvo. Their turn's over because they just blocked my big ol' attack. And then I start with my big ol' attack. And then, I played another Somersault. And then I set it. And then I played it again. And then the game's over, right? By the third crippling crush, the game's just done. And that kind of spot, it felt like, wouldn't have been possible with Awakening and Somersault. So I would probably ban Awakening. And I would restrict Somersault. But I know that, like, Michael, I mean, you were only playing blues, right? You weren't playing yellows.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I think one of the problems with Starvo is, surprise, surprise, he has a really big card pool, and it's really good because they're all crazy. Like, the ice cards, if you build towards them, are very good. The lightning cards, Somersault, are very good. The earth cards, Felling of the Crown, are very good. So I think probably if they want Starvo to not just be the best deck, I think they would have to go very deep. Like, it would be, I think, like, Winter's Whale. Or like Crown of Seeds or Stalagmite, plus probably some main deck cards. Because like we've seen the like restrict a bunch of main deck cards and see if it's good enough, and it's not, right? Unless you restrict like 10, 15 main deck cards. And that just becomes like a little bit too much, especially because they're all for the most part cards that are legal in other heroes. And it's just like, you're kind of letting the format be ruined by this guy if you just restrict every good card that you play. Like, restricting Felling isn't not going to make him the best deck. Like, he's still the best deck, right? If you restrict 4 or 5 other cards, maybe. But I don't know. I just think it probably has to be a heavy hand and a firm grip to actually deal with the hero. And if you don't want it to be the best deck, if they want it to be the best deck and other decks be playable, then I think a smaller hit like just banning Awakening or something like Felling would be fine.
What about you, Michael?
Yeah, I think it does depend a lot on what you want the format to look like. And I think restricting Felling, we talked about how I wasn't playing Starstruck. Well, Easton Douglas got second at the calling. He wasn't playing Felling. I do think ultimately you should be playing Felling in the Crown if you're trying to play the best Starvo deck. I think it's just inherently too strong to leave on the table. And I think the Cadaverous Tillings they're not that big of a cost to have as your supporting cast for Felling in the Crown. And Cadaverous Tilling blue, I think, is one of the best earth blues, and the red is just great. It's wounded and better when you're Starvoing. So I think restricting Felling probably doesn't do it. I do think, even though I was on 3 electromagnetic somersaults, I do think that card is very, very good. And if I didn't think it was good, I wouldn't be playing any copies of it. I think that the blue is probably the best one. Mm-hmm. It's the most flexible. You get having a blue is just inherently much stronger than a yellow.
I discovered that actually over the weekend. There was a spot where I discovered very in real time the difference between a blue card and a yellow card.
Yeah. Say hypothetically, you pitch a yellow to activate Crown of Seeds, and then you draw another yellow. And if you drew a blue, you would be able to do something pretty powerful.
Or say two turns earlier, you play a sink below, and then you draw a yellow instead of your blue, and you have to use your tunic counter. And then two turns later, you activate Crown of Seeds, and you look for a resource, and you look at your poor little tunic, and it's at two. And you wonder, where is my tunic?
Yeah, so I think that the playline that you talked about earlier, Lucas, where you played Awakening, and then you Crippling Crush, and then you Somersault it, and then you Crippling Crush, and then you Somersault it. Well, I think they restricted two of Starvo's best attacks, Crippling Crush and Oakenold. And now he just has Somersault. So those restrictions, it doesn't really feel like you're only playing one per game. Even if you're only on the blue Somersaults, which I was, it came up a real amount of times where I was Somersaulting a big attack back. I Somersaulted Felling especially quite a few times. Mm-hmm. Felling doesn't ask you that much. You just have a Somersault, an Ice card, and a Felling. And then you Starvo, you Felling for 10. You Somersault it back, you get an Arsenal, you're Felling, you attack for 10, dominate, and killed a card from them. A very good three-card hand. So I think restricting Somersault makes a lot of sense. It is sad that I think Aurora is the main other deck that is using Somersault, but I think that's probably worth the cost if you want to tone down Starvo. I think Somersault's just the card that makes the most sense to restrict if you want to tone it down slightly. I think your lightning cards get significantly worse once you restrict Somersault. We go back to the sad times where you're playing like blinks or flashes or whatever.
Well, you were only playing one trip. So, I mean, like you can just put more trips back in your deck too. Like I think trip is a very good lightning card still.
Trip style sure. on me in a lot of the mirrors.
Yeah, I think it's really important in the mirror.
Yeah, I think that trip is a lot worse than Somersault in the mirror and in basically every matchup.
Sure.
I do think, yeah, if that's probably the next lightning card I would play after the three blocks is maxing on trips if Somersault was restricted.
And the reason why I went with Felling of the Crown is because pre-Rosetta, pre-Felling, a lot of Starvo's like two-card hands weren't really very good. Like they were like, I was talking about like when I was playing Starvo in Osaka, for example, like my two-card hands were like attack with like Autumn's Touch or like attack with like Red Fruits of the Forest and like two card sevening is just whatever. Yeah. But having a two card eight plus the added disruption of like your opponent has to get rid of a card with just like your two card hands after if you block or you're not doing the Starvo thing is very powerful. And that just wasn't a thing that he really had lined up for him very much before. Like his two card hands are just kind of anemic. So having access to such high power, like just more functional hands overall just increases the power level of the deck just because its floor is already higher now.
Yeah, I remember you and I were preparing for, it was Columbus, the Battle Hardened that you played Starvo at recently, right? Mm-hmm. And you were like messaging me and I was talking about how pre-Rosetta, one of the cards that I really liked and that I kind of was the only person that I saw playing it and I really liked was Disable. It was a card that I was playing in my deck. And what I really liked about Disable was that it gave me a good thing to do when I wasn't fusing. But it was also really good when I did fuse. Like when I did fuse, it hit pretty much every time. It's a really good piece of disruption is a big old number. And then when I couldn't fuse, it was still a reasonable turn. It still made them block or, you know, disrupt them or whatever. And then I kind of moved that towards like cut through the facade was like in this set, we got this new card that filled a similar role where it's a good small hand when you don't fuse. And then when it does fuse, it pretty much just does its thing and disrupts them meaningfully. Mm-hmm. And like we had a card this whole time that was there and just also fused.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are
we and block doing? Three.
And it blocks three. Like, what are we doing with all these like shitty other cards? And we have Felling right there.
Yeah.
It just like does everything the deck could possibly want. Like, it's great on a fuse. It's great when you don't fuse. It's good arsenal. Like,
yeah. So I think the Somersault is like, if you want to take off his ceiling, if you want to lower his ceiling, I think Somersault is a good card to restrict, but if you want to like lower his floor again, that's why I was like
going specifically into aggro as well. I think Somersault is like one of the biggest offenders into like you look at like Zen and Aurora and Acilio and Briar, and it's like when you play against somebody that can just actually throw the same seven cost or Spinal Crush at you every turn for the whole game. Like I had a three game span against my local the night before where I played 10 Starstrucks. The games were all like 4 or 5 turns long. And it was like, I was just dominating Starstrucks every single turn of the game because this was just my lightning card was always a Somersault.
Sure.
This Starstruck just never goes away. And like these aggro decks that are trying to not block, and are already having a hard time with Channel Lake Frigid, already having a hard time with Winter's Wail and Stalagmite, if you can just like throw a Starstruck or a Crippling or a Spinal or an Oakenold every single turn of the game, it's just like, what? Like, what are they supposed to do? Like, sure. There's just nothing really. It feels like, you go down, like literally, like I was mentioning earlier, I go down 30-2 against Zen, but then I have 8 somersaults in my deck. So once I draw an attack, I just need to draw like fuses and somersaults for the rest of the game, and they just can't, don't have a win condition essentially. Sure. Just skip 4 of their turns.
Do you have anything you want to add, Michael?
Not that I haven't said before. Somersault is very good in some spots.
Because I was going to wrap up with like the last topic as for like looking forward, I guess not like no changes to the format that came out with the ban yesterday. That's fine. That's all good and well. Don't want to like have a reactionary ban or restriction. But as far as other heroes potentially rising up to the level of Starvo's power level, we're seeing like expansion slot cards like Call, for example, like could be a big game changer for a deck like Chain, even though it's targeted obviously for Vincent. Chain's still going to get access to that very powerful Shadow Runeblade card. And then in Rosetta, there was the Earth Lightning Fuse card or Earth Lightning Dual card in the supplemental slot for Briar. And do you think they need to maybe put a couple more or hit some kind of sweet spot for supporting Living Legended heroes in the supplemental slot?
So I really think that a big part of Starvo being the best deck was he just got like 2 sets for him. He got Rosetta, which was an Earth Lightning set. He's an Earth Lightning hero. And then he also got the Jarl Armory deck, which was an Ice Earth Guardian deck that added both new equipment and lots of great new Ice Blue Block 3s. And I think that there will be times where other heroes are getting like more support than he is. I think like this specific point in the metagame, Starvo probably is just the best deck by a good amount because he just got so much support. But if they keep adding support to other heroes, I wouldn't surprise me if that gap gets a little bit smaller.
Like Mastery Pack Guardian supporting like Old Him and Victor and Bravo, Showstopper in LL, of course.
Maybe. I mean, because eventually, like, all heroes are going to Living Legend until the heat death of the universe, in theory, right? So as far as, like, giving support for older heroes, like, I think, in particular, Icelander is a hero that all of us have, like, an affinity for. And if she was even at all viable in Living Legend format, we'd at least, like, consider playing her. But Icelander Starvo matchup is horrendous. It's like
matchup is horrendous.
Yeah, it's just like she, when you're showing up to Living Legend and you're still trying to just throw Wounded Bulls as like your average turn cycle plays, it's not really a great spot to be in when like your opponents can like 30 you or Starvo sending all this dominated damage at you at turn after turn. And so, I don't know what it would take necessarily for Icelander to like rise up to be like a reasonable option, but like I think it's something worth considering.
I think it needs Rosetta. Like it needs like kind of what Starvo got, I would think, is like new main deck options and probably new equipment. Like I would imagine she just needs a new arms that does something. And I would have to also imagine that she would have to have some new threats in the main deck. Like a Felling kind of card where like more ice veins and just good ice cards. Because like right now she has good things that she does and she can control some games, but like that's only half her deck. The rest of half of her deck is just like, what are you going to do? Put like you mentioned, like wounded bulls and like,
yeah. And she also got kind of died for Starvo sins a little bit too, because her best thing was like, she could instant speed hypothermia, but yeah, that's just restricted now because of Starvo's dominance. So
yeah. Well, I don't even think hypothermia is that good in Starvo. Like I played one, but the only times I cast it, I was like, if my opponent has Deadwood Dirge here, I'm just losing the game.
Yeah, you annihilated me through a hypothermia in our last game. Like, I'm Viscerai.
I think hypo to 3 would see more consequences a little bit. I think
Chain. Like, what would you cut for hypothermia?
I think Chain. I mean, anything if Chain.
Blizzard, maybe?
That's because we see now, like, Chain, especially. I think Chain was already probably one of the other better decks in LL. But we see this new Cull card, like it's good in Vincent. That card is just bananas in Chain. Like that card is so crazy because you're going to get it for free.
Yeah.
And then like your Starvo opponent goes, here's a 9 dominate, go again. And you're like, take 9. call from my banish for free. No Winter's Whale. Okay, cool. Next turn. Oh, you said no blocks? I have this set card. Call. Banish my Blood Debt card. Oh, you banish your Crippling Crush because you need three cards of Fuse. Yeah, nice. Mm.
And you don't even need to banish a Blood Debt card because you could just end on Cole as long as you don't.
Yeah, you
can
do that too. Yeah, it's crazy. I think Hypo to three would help that matchup a lot more than I think LSS wants them to. I think if you have one Warmongers and three Hypo, it becomes a lot more reasonable, I think, to just block out Chain.
Sure.
Because like in the end game, you are just going to have like four cards that basically just mean that you're not going to take any damage on the next turn, and they're going to probably take a bunch of Blood Debt.
Well, it depends. It depends on the chain build, right? Because Cody Williams,
playing Dirge, they can't just
had six copies of Deadwood Dirge. Yeah. And I remember I drew my Hypothermia, and I look at his graveyard, and I look at his banish, and I'm like, well, there's five Dirges here. I just have to hope he doesn't have the sixth one, or I'm going to lose on the spot.
Yeah.
I still lost that game, but he didn't have the Dirge.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah, Deadwood Dirge being a nice counter to that card also is really interesting. So
yeah, and Viscerai also gets a bunch of outs where he gets become the Arknight and Deadwood Dirge.
Viscerai can also just like play
setup turn.
Yeah, or just like ninth blade.
Play through it. Just play through it. Like no problem. Like I've witnessed it. Yeah, especially if you're on the Belittle version, it's just like you threw like three Belittles at me, and I just was like, oh okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh well. All right.
I'm the hero, man. Get it over with.
Format's sweet though. I think Living Legend is definitely needed for the long term of the game. I think having outlets to do these really cool, powerful things, let people revisit their favorites, is definitely something that like is critical for the long term sustainability of the game. So I was really happy to play in the tournament over the weekend.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun, and it's kind of cool for Guardian. Like Guardian's been so bad in CC for so long, so it was nice to get a player, a powerful Guardian again.
Yeah,
and
for
Ice.
Sure.
Ice has been gone for so long. I get to play Ice. I get to play Guardian, and I get to play Starvo.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now you got Jarl and Class Constructed again. Yeah, so.
Ice is back.
Yeah, Ice is back.
Ice is back.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No bad matchups for Jarl.
Stalagmite's back. Okenold's back. We're in.
What could possibly go wrong?
You even get three Oakenolds in Classic Constructed.
You get three Hypothermias, too. I mean, we're cooking.
It's easy.
It's over.
All right. Anything you want to touch on, Lucas, before we wrap things up here then?
No. Just want to say thanks for having me on. I get to talk about Starvo for an hour. I always enjoy doing that. Congrats, Michael, on your win. I'll definitely get you next time. Can't let you have the last win. But, just thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
What about you, Michael?
I am looking forward to our next battle in the top 8 of a calling. Hopefully that keeps happening because that means we're both doing great in callings.
I hope so too.
Well, the next time you are revealing an Ice, Lightning, and Earth card, always remember, mind your manners. Thanks for watching.